Federal funding ended October 1st, and now it's up to you to keep your favorite programs on the air. Every day this gap lingers, the shows and reporting you rely on are at risk. We've still got $400,000 left to close our funding gap. The programs and conversations you count on every day depend on your support. When you give now, you help close the gap and keep trusted, independent news here for Chicago. Make an affordable monthly gift online at wbez.org/donate.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
Can somebody go in the hallway and get Lisa for me? This is an older person who's being under arrest.
Now, I know the department has made claims that there's protesters trying to break in to the hospital, but I just have to say that those claims are not only false, they're flat out lies. I was outside of the hospital till about 10 o'clock that night. No one tried to break in. No one was harassing the ICE agent.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news in and around Chicago after the conversation that you just clicked on. But before we get to the interview about Chicago doctors who are sounding the alarm and calling for hospitals to stay true to their mission and remain as sanctuaries that protect human life, I want to peel the curtain back just a bit. In the Loop producer Linnea Dominic is here with us, and she produced the episode. Hey, Linnea.
Hey, Sasha.
So this idea came from an op-ed in the Sun-Times, Linnea. I remember our executive producer, Dan Tucker, brought us the paper, showed us this article. It immediately stuck out to me because they're making some really interesting parallels.
They really are. They're taking us back to 1850 Chicago when residents are stepping up to protect people fleeing slavery after the Fugitive Slave Act was passed and it was illegal for anyone to protect people fleeing slavery.
Yeah.
And I loved learning about the ways that Chicagoans said, no, we're not going to do this. We are going to protect people. We believe in freedom.
And of course, these doctors are looking at our present day situation where we're seeing lots of immigration raids and just ICE arrests. And they're looking for Chicagoans to step up in this case, medical institutions really to step up because we've seen these ICE arrests and ICE enforcement interactions play out in hospitals.
We have, and they really expect that it will continue.
And what sticks out to me is, you know, when I think of the conversation I had with the two doctors, one in particular, she mentions, you know, I think I asked her something like, you know, why did this become an inspiration for you? Or, you know, what did this make you think of? And she said, well, if you're a Black woman living here in Chicago, and, you know, if you're of a certain age, you definitely draw back to those comparisons because what's happening right now is an injustice. And we've seen, if you've lived a certain amount of time, you have seen people rise up before.
Yes, exactly. And these are women who have dedicated their entire careers to public health.
Yeah, well, let's get into the conversation because it's super interesting. That's In the Loop producer Linnea Dominic. Thank you so much for stopping by.
My pleasure.
At the table, Dr. Linda Ray Murray, who's professor at University of Illinois Chicago's School of Public Health and former chief medical officer of the Cook County Department of Public Health. And Dr. Claudia Fagan, national coordinator for the Physicians for a National Health Program and former chief medical officer of Cook County Health. Hospitals as sanctuaries, places that are supposed to be mission-driven and protecting human life. When did this start, Dr. Fagan?
Well, so Cook County first started this more than 5 years ago when we put signs up throughout our facility saying all are welcome here when there were initial threats of removing people. And we wanted people to feel safe coming to the hospital to get the care they need.
Yeah. Anything to add, Dr. Murray?
I think there's a long tradition in healthcare. If people remember, even during warfare, open warfare, the medical personnel take care of everyone. It doesn't matter whether it's a soldier on your side or the opposite side. This is basic human courtesy, and I think physicians and nurses and all healthcare workers are sworn to provide basic humanity to our patients.
So as you talk about basic human courtesy, basic humanity, I wonder what it was that you saw in our present day that basically sparked the idea of writing this op-ed.
Well, first, let me just say for Cook County, where we are related to the Cook County Jail, we are used to having people who are incarcerated and under police authority come. And we've worked out over the years basic policies that make sure that patients' rights are protected, even when they're actually in custody.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the historical parallels hit you in the face. This immigration law, I'm not a lawyer, but this notion that anyone who looks Latino or looks like they don't belong can be just grabbed illegally, from what I understand, without a clear warrant, I think violates basic law. But then to invade schools and to invade our healthcare settings, not only our hospitals, but our clinics, I think is a real danger, not only to people who are here without documents, but to all of us that live in Chicago.
Yeah.
I think whenever we create a mindset of us and them, and we think of people as other, that there's an opportunity for people to begin to think that they're less than us,
mm-hmm.
and that it sets up a dynamic that doesn't honor human decency, that doesn't treat those who don't look like us or aren't from the same background or same religion or whatever criteria you're using, that they're somehow not entitled to the same things that we are. And I think that that's what's happening with this immigration, that we are, you know, how dare us say that some of us are more entitled than others to basic human rights.
And in your op-ed that's titled, Chicago is Choosing Justice Over Fear, as it has in the past, you cite what we recently saw happen, right? Alderperson Jesse Fuentes of the 26th Ward being handcuffed at the Humboldt Park Hospital. That was a pretty high-profile moment across the city. What else did it signal for you when that happened, Dr. Fagan?
Well, the idea that it didn't matter who she was, it didn't matter what her background was, she did not touch the officers. She was merely asking a question. But the idea that she had no right to challenge their authority, even though they were not in a place that we normally would expect law enforcement to be. And their response to her was violent and inappropriate. You know, we have to be able to engage in a dialogue. And the idea that someone, it didn't matter to me that she was an elected official, but that she was asking a legitimate question.
The question was, do you have a warrant?
Correct. And just by asking that question, they felt the right to pull her hands behind her back and zip tie her without any regard for her as a person.
So tell us more about what you're calling on medical facilities to do, Dr. Murray.
Well, I think we all will do better when we stand together. And so I think it would be helpful if all of our CEOs of our hospitals, not only in the city of Chicago, but in the surrounding area, and our health centers, if we come together and say, no, these are basic human rights. This is how we operate in medicine in the United States of America. Patients have a right to privacy. They have a right not to be tied to a bed. I think these standards are not controversial in the health community. And I think what's needed is for our leaders of our health institutions to stand up together
mm-hmm.
and insist that these basic rules be followed.
And you're calling for this to extend to families of patients as well as to staff?
And everyone. And
citywide.
And outside the city, too. I live in Chicago, but outside the city. Because, again, you don't want people intimidated. You don't want someone who is there maybe translating or bringing an elderly relative to the doctor. You don't want people to be scared away from seeking basic health care. That's a fundamental human right, and I think that we need to protect that at all costs.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about the Jesse Fuentes situation at the Humboldt Park Hospital, Dr. Fagan. Also in September, we saw lawyers for Francisco Mejia Olalde say that he was detained by ICE outside of McNeil Hospital in Berwyn when he was picking up his daughter, who's a nurse at the hospital. So far, we're seeing these isolated incidents. I don't know if you can think of any more that we've seen in recent weeks, but are you anticipating more activity at hospitals?
Absolutely, because they are struggling with numbers. They have goals in terms of collecting people. And the fact that the Supreme Court has now allowed them to pick up people just based on their appearance. You know, this is something that, you know, to discriminate, to decide, well, you look Spanish-speaking or you look other, as I said, this separation, thinking people who are different. It jeopardizes health care. It jeopardizes the stability of our community. And we think that we need to expand this not just in hospitals, but that there should be places that people are safe. Children should be safe to go to school. They should be able to go to worship. We saw this past weekend that clergy were denied the right to provide the detainees with communion. We are saying that they have no rights. And it's a lack of decency, of treating people as we would want to be treated.
And as we know, people have been picked up in court proceedings, even immigration court proceedings.
That's right.
But domestic violence and other court proceedings. So this really makes the whole community unsafe. We know that visits have gone down around the city in terms of people coming in to see their regular doctor, just like we've seen attendance in our schools go down. So this is really disruptive to the normal running of our society.
It's also disruptive to healthcare, right? The condition of folks, right? If they're delaying medical care because of fear.
And we know that that deteriorates our outcomes. We know that when people come late, when we don't get to do the routine preventive services, we wind up treating crises and emergencies.
Yeah. What's really interesting about your op-ed, doctors, is the fact that you draw this line. You compare the ways that volunteers are stepping up today, they're documenting ICE activity and they're connecting people to much needed services after their loved ones have been detained. You draw a comparison to the way that Black Chicagoans stepped up back in the day, right? This when the Fugitive Slave Act was passed in the 1850s. How did that comparison come to mind, Dr. Fagan?
Well, it's not just Black Chicagoans. It was Chicagoans who the Fugitive Slave Act was passed, and they said, we should not participate in this activity. And to the point that one of the bounty hunters was warned when he came into Chicago that his life was in jeopardy if he was pursuing fugitive slaves. It's the idea that we had, again, separated people as other based on their appearance because they were Black, that they should be slaved, and the whole notion of slavery. And Illinois, well, Chicago Moore, decided that they would not participate in this activity. They would not support this activity. The people who were, they would provide food and shelter for people who were trying to escape from the South, and they were conductors of the Underground Railroad. But it was the notion that we have should have common decency, we should have humanity, and that people should not be treated in this way. And it's very parallel to what we're doing to immigrants in this country today.
Yeah. The thing is, Dr. Murray, that the vigilance committees and the patrols that residents developed, that's not widely known. So how did you come across the information?
Well, first, as a Black woman, even without doing any research on Chicago, we should see the parallels that exist. You know, it was illegal for anybody in this country to help people that were escaping slavery. And so we should understand that parallel. But I was aware that there were resistance in different places, Boston, Oberlin, Ohio. There were a number of places in the North where people passed what are called personal liberty laws, which are basically like our sanctuary cities. They said, no, here you don't have to worry about the slave catchers coming to get you. And when I was just doing some basic background checks to see what happened in Chicago, this is there in the history books. Mm-hmm. And if we forget our history, then we're in big trouble. So the city council, it was a city council vote that said, no, we are not going to enforce this federal law. We are not going to let the police help the slave catchers when they came. And this was at some personal cost, because if you were found as a white person to help a slave escape, you yourself could be fined. Just like we have people, priests and ministers and Congress people being challenged now by ICE forces. So this parallel should be, I know in our community there's some perhaps confusion or perhaps people don't remember the history well enough, but the South Shore raid should have made it clear to people. We are right behind it. We don't necessarily look Latino, though many of us are Latino. And to come into that South Shore where I live, where my family lives, and just arrest and zip tie children.
Overnight.
Overnight at 1 o'clock in the morning. I think this is a clear
helicopter swooping in.
Absolutely.
People being separated by race.
So as black people, we have seen this before. Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen it in my lifetime, and we've seen it certainly historically, and it's time for us to stand up.
So definitely I can see the ways in which the history would serve as inspiration for what you're talking about today. Because even as Dr. Murray brings up the city council rulings, then I think of Mayor Johnson, who I just had in studio last week, talking about ice-free zones, right? What else comes to mind
for Mayor Washington. Mayor Washington in modern history,
yes.
In 1985, what happened in there, if people don't remember, is that one of his employees in his administration, who happened to be Puerto Rican, which I want to remind people, Puerto Rico is a colonial territory of the United States of America.
Thank you for that.
And Puerto Ricans are citizens. American citizens.
They are U.S. citizens.
So they stopped and harassed a member of Harold Washington's administration. And that's why he wrote the executive order in 1985 saying, we are not going to cooperate with these immigration enforcement activities.
Yeah. Which is what led to where we are today. That it is that Harold Washington ordinance that says that we will not participate in this activity because it's recognizing that this is not a what thoughtful people do, how we treat each other.
And every Chicago mayor since Harold Washington has endorsed the concept of Chicago being a sanctuary city.
I love this quote in your piece. You say, this is bigger than politics. It's about whether we believe, as our forebears did, that no federal order can compel us to betray our humanity.
Exactly right. You know, how we treat our fellow human beings. Physicians, this is easy for us. This is what we do. We are mission-driven. But we need all of the city surrounding to participate in this activity, to recognize that we have to create this safety, that people are suffering, and we have an opportunity to relieve their pain and suffering.
And so you're calling on medical facilities. Now, I wonder if you are hearing things from other physicians, your peers across the country, across the city, about this need that you're emphasizing to protect patients and their families. And
physicians
staff.
Are seeing fewer patients come in for their routine visits.
So everyone's on alert.
They notice it, right? That their family members don't want to come with a company patient to their and provide assistance in terms of language skills. But all of the docs who I talk to say that they're seeing a decrease in the number of patients showing up for routine visits. And there's also a decrease in patients coming to the emergency room.
There are also doctors calling from outside of Chicago who see Chicago on the news and have called me and saying, are you all right? What's
yes.
going on there?
I'm getting those calls too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that we have a history in Chicago of standing up for what we think is right. And in this kind of instance, we have a history against standing up things that the federal government are doing that violate people's rights.
Yeah.
And that is wrong.
So to recap, you know, as I am laid out here, you are calling on medical facilities to step up and really hone in on the sanctuary piece of their mission. Lay out exactly what that citywide policy could look like. You have a sort of a little step here, four-step listing here in your op-ed about, you know, why this citywide policy is so urgently needed.
We would like to see the leaders of the hospital systems in the Chicagoland area come together as a coalition and say, we are going to stand together. We're going to standardize this. We are not going to allow ICE into our facilities without a warrant, that patients are entitled to receive the care that they've come for, that they need, and they're should be allowed to do this without harassment, and that the ICE has no business in our emergency rooms, at our front entrances, that patients should be allowed to come in and seek the care that they require. They should be encouraged to get the care, to maintain their, we think it's necessary that the CEOs, the leaders of these various hospital systems mm-hmm. all come together. They could have a joint press conference, an announcement, but they should have a pact that they will all participate, that it should not be one hospital or, you know, another.
And the staff should be trained. There are some hospitals in our area that have done a good job at this, but you have to train the basic clerk that greets the person that comes in the door.
That's right.
The nurses, the doctors, the janitors. They need to be trained on our policies. We train staff on other kinds of policies in healthcare. So we need to be trained, and we need to make sure that our patients have access to resources that they need. a Know Your Rights campaign, Know Your Rights information and literature, and organizations that not only help immigrants but also protect the basic human rights of people in the country.
Dr. Linda Ray Murray is a professor at the University of Illinois Chicago School of Public Health and former chief medical officer of the Cook County Department of Public Health. And Dr. Claudia Fagan is a national coordinator for the Physicians for a National Health Program and also former chief medical officer of Cook County Health. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Okay, now it's time to catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ news anchor Claire Lane, Chicago Sun-Times reporter and editor Mitch Armentrout, and Sun-Times reporter and assistant news desk editor David Struitt. Today is the start of the veto session in Springfield. So here's Mitch explaining what you need to know.
Veto session is when lawmakers come back in the fall. They had their long spring session. And in, you know, sometimes governors will veto bills. That doesn't happen terribly often in Illinois, where Democrats control all higher elected offices. But it's a chance for lawmakers to basically revisit things that they weren't able to get to back in the spring or earlier this year. It's an abbreviated session, so they're only going to be in this week, and then they'll be in for one more week at the end of the month.
Okay.
But there are some pretty big bills facing them.
So a little bit shorter schedule.
Right, right.
So lawmakers say that they want to get laws on the books to restrict how Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, how they can operate here in Illinois. So what are the proposals that are emerging so far?
So House Speaker Chris Welch says that they're basically still trying to brainstorm ideas. Obviously, this is kind of top of mind for everyone, especially in the Chicago area caucus, with the huge ramp up in deportations over the last month. But, you know, the general ideas, I was talking to State Senator Corina Villa, who's really become one of the leading voices in the state Senate against ICE operations here. She's calling it sort of an ICE out campaign, which is sort of this term that a lot of activists have kind of latched onto. Basically, just this idea of trying to bar where ICE agents can go in and deport people, because we have seen a lot of videos, troubling videos of folks being taken away from hospital rooms. This is happening in courthouses, near courthouses, outside schools.
Right.
So lawmakers are trying to see exactly what they can do to try and basically keep federal agents out of there. The biggest question is, how do you enforce that? Because we're talking about federal agents. And which state are state police going to handle this? It's pretty murky how that can actually happen.
This entire invasion of Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers has just caused so many questions about, like, who's responsible here? Like, when an incident arises, it's like, who's investigating this? Which level of government? Just a lot more questions, I think, than answers.
Right, and that's kind of what the Trump administration, they kind of use that to their advantage. When it's unclear, when there's a shooting, when a federal agent shoots, a person who's in a traffic stop, are local police in a very small suburb going to investigate the Department of Homeland Security? Like, it's just not really feasible. And it leaves a lot of legal gray area.
Absolutely. And Claire, the Evanston City Council unanimously agreed to a resolution yesterday that prohibits the use of city property for federal immigration enforcement operations. Now, it comes, of course, after Chicago adopted a similar policy last week. This creates ICE-free zones here in the city. At the same time, though, in Forest Park, ICE enforcement at a cemetery?
Yeah, so we should note first that the Evanston Now is reporting that ways to enforce, and what Mitch is talking about too, some of these ice-free zones, remains unclear how city officials are going to continue to sort of regulate that, right? They're still working on that in the fine print, but they are developing signs as of right now, just stating very clearly, you know, this is not a place for immigration enforcement. I mean, it's a starting point, right? But yeah, so the town of Forest Park, reporting from WBEZ's Chip Mitchell, there was a WGN broadcast video that showed masked agents, this was last week, breaking through a locked gate into Concordia Cemetery and firing pepper balls, which we've been seeing also at the Broadview ICE facility. President Trump's administration said that these cemetery workers, they were trying to impede a rescue of so-called criminal illegal aliens in the Des Plaines River, right?
Wow.
So a Forest Park mayor, this is Rory Hoskins, says that the agents, they showed no regard for the law and essentially defended these cemetery workers as saying that they were mistreated, they were wrongfully detained. And it's another case, as Mitch is pointing out as well, of the Trump administration is saying one thing, you know, video, sometimes body cam footage
showing
something else. Mm-hmm. And local officials basically asking for more transparency and accountability for some of these agents' actions, like firing pepper balls and questionably detaining people.
Yeah, and a quick note here. There's a survey that was conducted last month, and it shows that 56% of Chicagoans believe that using the U.S. military and National Guard to assist local police is unacceptable, while 66% of Chicagoans surveyed oppose the military and National Guard being used to help in deportations. All right, so another big ticket item in Springfield, David. This is that $202 million funding cliff for Chicago area transit. So I'm talking CTA, Metra, and PACE. How did we get here again?
This has been a long time coming. We've known about this cliff for 3 years now. Transit agencies, CTA, PACE, Metra, they've been operating. They've been propped up by federal funds basically since the pandemic because people aren't riding the way they used to. And
so it's pretty crucial then to fill that hole.
Exactly. The money runs out the end of next year. And the CTA says they're going to have massive cuts, layoffs, if lawmakers don't give more tax money, basically, to the agencies. And they're going to try to figure that out in the veto session, pass a bill finally. They tried in May. They failed. And this is basically the last shot they got.
So what exactly are they proposing then to just stop us from going over this cliff into a fourth and fifth and sixth year?
They need to find a lot more money for transit agencies. The bill that they were trying to pass in May was going to give $1.5 billion a year to the agencies to basically not just to fill the gap, but to actually give them more money so they can increase service.
And the CTA, I was reading this in the Sun Times this morning, also announcing a fare hike. What's going on, David?
That's right. All the agencies are proposing this. It'll go into effect February 1st. It's basically a 10% hike. So like a bus ticket that's $2.25 is going to cost $2.50. A train ticket that's $2.50 is going to cost $2.75. The CTA says that this is actually a pretty minor increase. The last time they've increased fares was in 2018. And they say that if they increased fares with inflation, they would have had to do 30% increases instead of 10.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, the CTA and all the sister agencies, they've been warning for years of, you know, severe potential bus and rail cuts if the state doesn't raise funding for transit agencies, which are, of course, about to run out of federal pandemic grants. And they haven't quite seen ridership return to those pre-pandemic levels, have they?
No. work habits have changed. People aren't going to the office 5 days a week like they used to.
Right. Yeah. So a couple other things on the docket, Mitch, possibly for this veto session. One, this is a plan to lower electricity bills. Hallelujah. Can I say that yet?
At least keep them within some sort of control, I think.
Because boy, did mine go up this summer.
Yeah, everybody's kind of noticed that, especially this summer is when they really shot up. There's a huge increase in demand for power across the country, really, because of these big data centers that are going up everywhere. A lot of those to power quantum computing operations. Mm-hmm. There's just a massive demand for data, which means a massive demand for power, which means it costs more money to get it. Environmental groups, lawmakers, business groups they've been trying to hammer out ways to basically incentivize companies to produce more wind power, solar power, and get that power onto the state's grid to share and potentially export to other states too. They're also trying to figure out ways to make it more affordable for companies to develop these gigantic batteries that store some of that energy and are stored underground. It's pretty wild stuff, some of the technology they're talking about. I mean, a lot of this is still, a lot of this is new technology that is not fully fleshed out. So this is...
I wonder what's the likelihood of some of this stuff.
It's kind of a new frontier, and it's tough to get everyone to agree, as we found out in the spring session. There was a bill that included a lot of these business incentives back in the spring, but it fell apart at the last second because folks are worried that, on one end, that it would be too expensive for companies to make some of these investments,
right,
but also that it would, just not really solve the problem, get at the problem of higher household electricity bills. So
yeah.
It's a tough discussion.
Yeah.
And it seems unlikely that they're going to be able to solve this over 6 days.
And here's another one. They want help for that new Bears stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Illinois State Senate President Don Harmon, he's been no ally of the Bears throughout their saga looking for a new stadium. And he had kind of the line of the week, I thought, when he said the Bears should consider this a bye week when it comes to the veto session for lawmakers. If that gives you any idea of their prospects of getting legislation. Basically, what the Bears want, and what a lot of lawmakers think is a good idea, broadly speaking, not just for the Bears, is it's called mega development legislation, which basically would allow big companies that are, making big investments in like a multi-billion-dollar stadium to negotiate their property tax bill with local governments at a discounted rate for X number of years. But there's a lot of state lawmakers, specifically in Chicago, who don't want to do the Bears any favors moving up to Arlington Heights. So it seems unlikely to happen, but the Bears have been, they're going for it again.
Yeah. And David, it is, of course, day 14 of this federal government shutdown. I mean, if you go to many airports around the country, you're going to see a TSA video that's featuring Homeland Security Chief Kristi Noem. In the video, she's blaming Democrats for the shutdown. What is going on here? Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have. The story is that, there's typically a video in the TSA line, security line, where, it's like, welcome to the airport. If you see something, say something. Kristi Noem has a new video that it's very political, blaming the Democrats for the shutdown. It's so political that some airports are refusing to play it. At least five have. I think the Seattle airport was the first one to say, we're not playing this video.
Is it at O'Hare and Midway?
I've asked the city if they're going to refuse to play the video, and they haven't told me yet.
Interesting. What other stories are you watching, Claire?
Well, this is notable for the South Side especially. This is a music venue and event space, the Promontory. It's closing its doors.
Yes.
This is at the end of the
so
year.
So sad.
11 years in business in Hyde Park. It posted its farewell yesterday on social media, but didn't really give any explanation or elaborate on why it's closing, saying only that it will remain open for that last New Year's Eve party.
Yeah.
But as we know, this helped launch the careers of Chance the Rapper, Vic Mensa, lots of black and brown artists. Mm-hmm. On the South Side and across the city. So we'll see what comes of this.
Yeah. Mike Madigan's also checked in.
Yeah.
In West Virginia.
He is
jail.
He is about 500 miles farther away than he wanted to be.
Wow.
In a minimum security prison. Yeah. Outside of Pittsburgh. He wanted to be in Terre Haute, Indiana. That didn't work out for him.
Not
but
so much.
He's got 7.5 years to go.
All right, Mitch, on Thursday, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson is introducing his budget proposal. So he needs to fill, of course, that $1.15 billion hole. He would need support from Springfield. What do you think?
Well, the odds of Brandon Johnson getting help from Springfield at this stage of the game are pretty low to get help, at least immediate help with the budget. He's tried to push a lot of ideas through Springfield in his first couple of years in office. And, he just doesn't really have those legislative connections, I think is fair to say.
Mm.
A lot of lawmakers don't really like the way he's sort of approached them over the years and just not really developing those relationships. But, I think at this stage of the game, especially in an abbreviated veto session, getting some sort of fix for the CTA is really the most that he can hope for, at least at this stage of the game. He's presented a lot of progressive revenue ideas. He's
right.
Looking to impose a tax on services to try and generate more revenue for the city, or at least allow the city to impose those. Again, those are really unpopular. Those are tough things to pass in a full session, let alone 6 days. So
yeah.
Good luck to Brandon.
Good luck, Mayor Johnson. All right, David, lawmakers are beginning to meet today. What are you going to be watching for when it comes to this transit cliff we talked about?
They've had all summer that they said they've been working on making a proposal that people could agree on. So I'm really curious to see if they've gotten to that point.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.
What happens when you say yes for an entire year? Join WBEZ on October 26th for an evening with Titan of Television, Shonda Rhimes, as she recounts lessons from her best-selling memoir, Year of Yes. Tickets at wbez.org/events.